Yeah, it's only a few hours now until the big man comes down everybody's chimney, and we decided to get a podcast team together. Well, two of us, anyway. So it's Christmas Eve. This is the podcast from the people behind CelticUnderground.net. Ready for Christmas. I hope you've got some people to spend your time with. And it's Christmas Eve. The Celtic FC Foundation raised an incredible £310,000, and this is where the money went. 129 grand was shared between 645 families with children in Scotland and Ireland. Five different homeless charities received £54,500. Eight children's charities received £43,000. £20,000 went to women's aged charities. £15,000 went to three refugee charities. And £10,000 went to 100 vulnerable people, elderly people living near Celtic Park. It's been a fantastic time. Where I have been helping with the Celtic FC Foundation, and if you don't know the work, there's been a lot of chat about people sitting and fitting with the values of Celtic FC. If you don't know the work of Celtic FC Foundation, I would strongly urge you to go online and have a look, drop them an email to find out, give them a call. The team will tell you what they do, where all the money goes, how they raise it, and the fantastic work that they do that really fits with the ethos of the club. Anyway, it's Christmas Eve. Hope everybody has a fantastic time. I dialed up Hullboy, so this is me and Hullboy reviewing some games and previewing two. So in this pre-Christmas podcast, I have got Hullboy on. How are you doing, Hullboy?
I'm good, thanks, Harry. How are you?
I'm excellent, thanks. How's Christmas on the Yorkshire Riviera? Is the snow falling?
Christmas Eve here, so just all about set for it. So shopping done.
Excellent. So it's been a few games. Interestingly, they've all been very similar. There's been three games in particular where we have scored two goals, but you felt we could have scored four or five. So I'll start with the Hibs game. So what did you make of the Hibs game on the Sunday?
I think your summary is exactly right. We created so many chances in these games, and the Hibs game was no exception. And I think actually the kind of frustration on the day in the crowd was probably because we didn't put chances away, but we were absolutely dominant in the game. And I think you get to the point where you're thinking, well, you know, when it was 0-0 or 1-0, you know, it only takes one kind of lucky break for the opposition to you know, kind of upset the apple cart, so to speak. But we did pretty well through the game, and we dominated it, really. And 2-0 was, you know, it was 2-0 going on 6 or 7, really.
Yeah, it was just that way with some of the chances, where it was one of those ones where the ball's played across the box, maybe 6 to 12 yards from goal, and you just feel that the players, whether particularly Forrest and Edward, mainly because they were the two that were in the box, you just felt as though they were sort of almost swinging their leg at it, and if it goes in, it goes in, if it doesn't, rather than really concentrating to get their heel up and toe down and hit over the ball and put it in the back of the net. So it was no surprise, I suppose, when Hibs didn't do particularly well against Rangers in midweek after watching the performance at Celtic Park.
Well, I don't think any of these teams are particularly good. You know, and there's an argument that says quite a number of teams in the Premiership have actually regressed. They're going backwards, which, from Celtic's perspective, it doesn't really make much difference, but I think from Rangers' perspective, that's assisted them. So,
well, something that I remember speaking about with Mark Cooper, whatever happened to him, at the beginning of the season in a podcast, we both discussed Rangers don't need to be better than us to put in a title challenge. Mm. They just need to be better than everybody else.
Yep.
And, well, that's what's happening.
well, and in that respect, they're actually being assisted by those other teams that are going backwards. But I think the thing for us is, with all these games, is, you know, we've just got that little bit of the points difference. And obviously we've played a game more now, so, you know, it's good that we've actually opened up that gap prior to, you know, the rest of the Christmas fixtures.
Yes, again, it's one of those ones where, when the fixtures are, as we're getting closer to December, you're getting agitated that we've got so many games in December and we've got this unfair advantage, or we've got this disadvantage because we've got these extra fixtures that put a strain on our squad.
Yeah.
But now that we've actually got these extra games and we now have that psychological positive of the points advantage, you're actually quite thankful. And a Rangers support mate of mine was pointing out that due to the Rangers qualifying to the next stage of the Europa League, it's likely that we will have that game advantage at least until March.
Yeah.
And I think if they get through to the last 16 Europa League, it might go beyond. It'll go even further.
Yeah. What I'd not realised was that it was Celtic's decision to squeeze in an extra game and rearrange a fixture, as I understand it. So, I'm sure I read that somewhere, but I wasn't quite sure how that had happened, that the Hearts game was squeezed in as an extra fixture.
We were due to play, I think, is it League Cup final? We were due to play Hearts, and they were scheduled for St Johnstone.
Ah, right.
But because we were due to play on the Sunday.
It would have been the Sunday, yeah.
And they were playing on the Friday night.
Right.
Against Hibs. Their Hibs game was always for the Friday night for TV.
TV, yeah.
Then we were able to squeeze in the Hearts game midweek. Right. And they couldn't, obviously, playing on the Friday night.
No.
I suppose they maybe could have tried to do it on the Tuesday, but but anyway, so that's how we've ended up with the extra.
Right, okay. I think the only other things to really say about, specifically about the Hibs game, is that I think now he's just a cult figure already, but Jeremy Frimpong scoring the first goal, it was just, you know, he's just absolutely infectious. I mean, obviously the support just completely love him, but you can tell that everybody else at the club, in, you know, the playing staff, the coaching staff, they're all just kind of like that. You can almost see the enthusiasm rubbing off on them.
I mean, I think I sent a message to someone during the Hibs game saying that they don't know how to cope with him. They didn't, particularly the second half, I noticed, they just didn't know how to cope with Frimpong.
Yeah.
They were saying, I think, was it Hibs? They had three different players in the game that they moved over to try and deal with them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the other thing that we learned that game about him as well is that because he's quite small in stature, you kind of think, oh, well, he's going to be quite lightweight.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, he's got some great body strength. So if you actually see him going into kind of like 50-50 challenges where he's running kind of shoulder to shoulder with an opposition defender, he's got the physical strength as well to kind of shrug the opposition player off. So
I mean, the only thing I did notice, that I don't think we need to do this, or if you're going to, don't play him as a right back as you're going to do this. There was a couple of times in the second half Hibs played diagonal balls, high diagonal balls, obviously to try and play over Frimpong's head, and Scott Brown went over to protect him.
Yep.
And the thing I didn't like about that was then it ended up being a 50-50 and the ball broke loose. There was a couple of times the ball broke loose into the space where Scott Brown would be if he hadn't gone over to protect Frimpong.
Yep.
And it was just during that game that I saw it again against with Aberdeen trying it, and I just thought,
but
I actually don't think you need to do it.
No, but what we did was, in that game, we deliberately kind of played Bolingoli and Frimpong higher, so we went 3-5-2, if you recall, for that game. So there was always going to be that space, potentially, in behind the two wing-backs.
Mm-hmm.
But and to a certain extent, that was probably the only place that Hibs could put the ball to relieve some of the pressure on themselves. So, but yeah, it was good, and obviously Edouard got another goal as well. So, on his kind of road to getting back to full fitness.
Yeah.
So it was pretty easy win really, and then it was onto the Hearts game.
Yeah. So what did you make of the game at Tynecastle?
Well, interesting, because you always kind of like look at those games and think, yeah, it's on the TV. You know you're going to be in for a tough game, because everybody talks about the cliches around Tynecastle, tight stadium, home crowd in the faces of Celtic. But actually, I wasn't particularly worried about the game. It was just, you know, when we would score and how we would score, really, this time, because they are really at rock bottom.
Yeah.
They're an absolutely awful team, and I'm quite pleased about that.
And Anne Budge, why is Anne the Budge, media not absolutely slating her? She has been, I mean, obviously, being part of the consortium that stops them going bust, she's going to be revered and for a very long time. But she's mucked up on the managers. She seems, obviously just seems as incapable of sacking Craig Levein, no matter how bad a job he's doing. I mean, she even mucked up on the main when they built the main stand. And she got the seat orders thing wrong.
Got the seat orders wrong. They've relayed the pitch, and the pitch last Wednesday was absolutely awful.
Yeah.
I wasn't at the game, but you could see on the telly straight away. It was bobbly.
It was like a bad shiny suit. It was
exactly. So yeah, from Celtic's perspective, it was I suppose it's probably one of the easiest victories we've had at Tynecastle in a long time, really.
First 20 minutes, I thought it was stereotypical of Hearts trying harder than they try against everybody else.
Yeah.
They were running around, they were very physical, they were in our faces. First 10, 15 minutes, the game was getting played, a large chunk in our half, and then obviously that was all they had.
Yep. Yeah, I think you're right there. It was just that extra bit of endeavour, but there was nothing there that you could see that tactically was going to throw us off our game. It was, for me, and I think I tweeted at the time, it was all about the conditions. Mm-hmm. And if we overcame the conditions, then we were going to win that game. And obviously, once Christie got the goal, which, you know, fantastic piece of play by Edouard.
Yeah.
He's just doing some wonderful things with the ball now. Sometimes I think Forrest and Christie and others are just not quite on his wavelength in terms of his thinking. But if he keeps doing what he's doing, they'll plug into that. And funnily enough, there was just a slight mix-up between Forrest and Christie.
That's right,
Because I think Forrest thought he was probably in a better position than he probably was when Edouard first kind of back-heeled it. But Christie put the ball away really, really well.
Do you know what I think as well? I always think the way Edouard plays with the ball, you know, the sort of very light flyaway balls that kids get?
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like he's playing with one of those balls compared to everybody else, because it's just, his touch is just fantastic. And you know, getting back to the people talking about Morelos scores goals, right? Can't deny that. Puts the ball in the back of the net. But it's just the complete rounded player, which is what you need when you've got the modern way of playing with one guy up front that brings in midfielders who run beyond the ball and things like that. That's the difference with Edouard.
The thing for me with Edouard is, you know, there's a tendency to compare him with Dembele, and Dembele was incredibly strong and a great goal scorer.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually do think that Edouard is more inventive, and I think there's always a lot of talk in football about strikers who can hold the ball up.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been chatting about that as supporters when Edouard's not been in the team, as to if there's anybody who can do that. And we've seen a couple of occasions where the team selection, like when we played Morgan up front, nothing would stick because he you know, that's not his natural game. But the thing with Edouard is he goes beyond holding the ball up, because actually he then goes on to create something very often once he's held the ball up. You know, it's not just always a simple pass back to advancing midfield players. You know, there's something more inventive and creative about him.
Well, the most obvious example of that was the chance he set up for Mikey Johnson in the League Cup final.
Yeah, exactly.
Where he holds the ball up, takes four Rangers players out, and plays a brilliant ball through to Mikey Johnson.
Yeah. He's got incredible strength, and the thing is, okay, we thought it would be difficult to replace Dembele when he left, but we'd already seen something of Edouard. But at this moment in time, because Edouard is going to go, and he may well go in the summer, but essentially, we really miss him if we don't get somebody of that kind of stature. Amazing player for his age.
Absolutely, and the challenge of replacing him is because he's such a rounded player already.
Correct.
And getting somebody that you know that can step into the team and be that player straight away, which is what we're going to need, is going to cost a lot of money.
Yep, great.
Anything else? I'm trying to think if there's anything controversial in the Hearts game.
No, I think the only other thing to say is, as well as obviously Ncham has been featuring a bit more.
Yeah.
So I was pleased he got the goal, and I actually thought that kind of shot that he took first time, that's the kind of thing that can just end up in the stand.
Yeah.
And the fact that he kept, you know, what was kind of quite a high bouncing ball down and into the net. It's pretty good technique, really. And again, from there, similar to the Hibs game, how we didn't end up scoring kind of three or four more.
I mean, that was my only agitation's a bit strong for it, but my only sort of slight frustration, agitation was getting back to, I suppose it gets back to what Aberdeen did and what Hamilton did. And I know we were 2-0 up by the time I was starting to get frustrated. No matter how crap a team is, they can go up the park, take a shot, balloons off somebody's backside into the opposite corner or whatever.
Yep.
And I was just watching it thinking, can we just make it three? Because you just don't want, with 10, 12 minutes to go, they get a lucky break, they make it 2-1. We decide to then hold on to our 2-1. You're at Tynecastle, it's a tight pitch, they all get excited about it. You just want to avoid all of that.
Yeah.
With hindsight, when you look back on a game, you think, well, it was never going to happen. They never looked like they were going to do that. Yeah. But while you're watching it, there is a small part of you thinking, yeah, but they get a corner kick and something happens at the corner. Just go and get the third goal that our play and our chances deserve.
Yeah. There's a little bit of that, but as I said, they're an awful team, and I'd seriously suggest that they're going down, because the other teams that are used to being at the lower end of the table, they know how to fight their way out of it.
It's an interesting point about that. I can't remember which team it was, but there was one of these bigger, more successful English or teams in a few years ago that everyone was saying were too big to go down. I remember somebody being interviewed saying, it might have been Middlesbrough when Brian Robson was there, and they had money in the club. I remember somebody saying, no, because the other teams that are in the relegation fight with them, they're used to fighting for promotion, fighting for relegation.
Yep.
They've got the mentality for it.
Yep.
And if we'd have beaten Hearts, if we'd have beaten them by four goals, if we'd have won 4-0, they'd have gone to the bottom of the league.
Yeah. Well, they're there now.
Yeah. and, you know, when Gary Locke was allowed to, who's the Dundee United manager now?
Robbie Nielsen.
Robbie Nielsen. Remember when Robbie Nielsen left and she allowed him to go and they'd finished third, was it? And she'd said, well, we're going to get a new manager in, and I would expect that it was it something along the lines of, if we don't finish above where we finished last season, that'll be a disappointment.
Amazing. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, just going back to what you were saying earlier about Ann Budge as well, is that the number of calls that they've made that have been just completely incorrect. I mean, I even read this week that because they've got two directors of football, one of them, I think Levine is concentrating on getting players out of the club, and McPhee is concentrating on getting players into the club.
Oh, man.
But as I understand it, they're both due to leave at the end of the season.
Uh-huh.
Or that Stendhal doesn't want McPhee as part of his setup. So it's absolutely bizarre. Really is bizarre.
Yeah. But
anyway.
Yeah, that's them. So on to the Aberdeen game.
Yeah.
That was another game where by the time they made it one each, we could have had three or four.
That kind of proves the point that, you know, having got the early goal and thinking that we were going to, you know, kind of just steamroller them in the same way that we had in the previous two games, it only takes kind of like one attack, you know, and I mean, Ayo was a bit flat-footed for that, really. So he never got up to the height that Cosgrove did.
I mean, at the game, I've subsequently seen their goal on the television, and it's not quite as I remember it at the game, which I suppose is one of the things about sometimes being instant criticism that we fans can have.
Yeah.
At the game, my perception of their cross in for the goal, it was flatter than it was.
Yeah,
but it was still, my perception was it was still a sort of a bit of a floaty cross.
It was, yeah.
It was inside the 6-yard box. So at the game, yeah, I was a wee bit agitated that our 6-foot-7 goalkeeper with an arm that when he sticks up and if he jumps a bit will take him well over 7 feet. At the game, I was agitated that he hadn't tried to come for it. Mm. It was a bit more loopy once I've seen it on the television.
Yep.
Than I thought at the game. And then you're right. I mean, basically, Aberdeen have got one player.
Yep.
Who can score goals.
Yep.
And the ball, they sent in a floaty cross for him.
Mm.
And between our 6-foot-5 centre-half and our 6-foot-7 goalkeeper, he was able to leap up and put a head in the back of the net.
Yep.
So I found that a bit frustrating at the game.
Yeah. But we were talking earlier about teams having regressed. Aberdeen have definitely regressed.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you've got to remember that it was, I think, it was kind of a couple of seasons ago, they had James Maddison on loan, and you know, he's doing pretty well in the English Premiership now.
Yeah.
So decent quality, and their backline is terrible, really. How on earth were you ever interested in McKenna is beyond me.
Well, it was the same person who not only was interested in Hendry but signed him.
Well,
and he couldn't even get on the bench away to Cluj. I mean, I actually feel sorry for him from a human perspective. Yeah. When he's so far away from the team that when Neil Lennon plays every fringe player he's got, he doesn't even get on the bench.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
Well, it is, but he's always been miles off, so I mean, it was just, I guess these kinds of mistakes get made in football. But he's just never ever shown anything like being the level of quality that we want, and McKenna definitely falls into that category as well. He was all over the place on Saturday.
The bonkers thing about McKenna is that Aberdeen turned down our four, I mean, I'm chuffed to bits they did, but Aberdeen turned down our £4.5 million for him.
Mm.
I mean, that is, what did it, because they apparently believe he's a £7-8 million player.
Mm.
So compare him with Julian.
Yeah.
There's no comparison.
No, exactly. And I think, I mean, I thought Julian had a good two good games, one against Hearts and against Aberdeen, apart from obviously the goal. But he's quality. And the thing is, what did we pay for him? 6-7 million.
Yeah.
So, but he's a terrific player. And again, it kind of leaves me wondering, well, two things. One is, we've been relatively successful with French players.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they've actually come from the French league or whether they've come through one of the other systems.
Yeah.
So we've done well there. So I'm not quite sure what's behind that, but that's all positive. But again, I wonder why nobody else was in for Julien. Because you would think that some of the English clubs would be scouting the French leagues, looking for kind of value for money.
I mean, there's only I don't know why 3-4 years ago, but there is a part of me wonders whether once a player gets to 25, 26, 27 and he's not playing for one of the elite teams.
Yep.
I wonder if there's an element of, well, he can't be any good because somebody would have spotted him by now. You know, a bit of a self-perpetuating thing.
Yeah.
And the only other thing,
the
only other thing I can see in Julien is occasionally he's been caught out for pace when somebody's outpaced him at the back.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether that's been the issue, but getting back to the middle to bottom half of the English Premiership.
Yeah.
How many times are they playing high up the park where the centre half might get caught for pace in behind?
Yeah. Well, that's why, you know, you've got players down there like Maguire, etc., you know, Manchester United paid a fortune for.
Yeah.
But any time you see him come up against anybody with pace,
mm-hmm.
he gets caught out.
Yeah.
But for some reason, those English players seem to kind of command an absolute fortune in transfer fees.
It's beyond me. I suppose it comes down to the, well, you've seen him perform in the Premiership, so you know what you're going to get from him.
Yeah.
If you go for somebody else.
Yeah.
There's a chance of getting somebody who's better, but there's also a chance you've wasted money on him. Is maybe that mentality. Although, it doesn't stop, you know, if you notice Liverpool must be laughing the inside of their face. They get £7 million for Ryan Kent, and they went and buy a Red Bull Salzburg with the money.
I suspect they've not got that £7 million yet.
I suspect so too. So, Aberdeen game, main things were...
We went 2-0, so Edouard got the second goal.
Yeah.
We looked as though we were going to be okay then. But then after that, there was the Cosgrove sending off red card, which for me, I mean, like you, I've watched the replays, but for me, it's still a red card. Mm-hmm. It's a reckless challenge. And there are lots and lots of people in the media, and obviously McInnes has said that he'll appeal it, and he was kind of quite vociferous in saying it's not a red card. It is a red card. Both
at the game,
both feet off the ground.
Yeah, guy right next to me at the game said, "Oh, I'm not sure if that's a red." And I said, "It's the distance that he started his dive in from, and the speed he was going at, which makes it reckless."
Yeah, because if he didn't get the ball, then I is potentially looking at a leg breaker.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, a mate is a Rangers fan, but he's pretty reasonable, and he said, I see McInnes is saying that it's not a red card. So I found a link to the challenge, sent it to him. And he said, the debate I heard on the radio about this demonstrates everything that's wrong with Scottish football. It's not the 1980s. That type of challenge is a red card.
Mm.
I mean, there's a Rangers fan seeing that challenge is a red card.
Yeah.
Because in modern football, I hate this thing that Scottish football pundits, if the stud of their boot scrapes the ball, well, he got the ball.
Mm.
Yeah, but that's not the be-all and end-all whether he got the ball or not.
No. It's a ridiculous argument. the whole thing is, okay, football's not become a non-contact sport. There's still contact in football, but the way in which the game is kind of policed and refereed over the years is actually to protect the welfare and safety of the players. Yeah. And as you say, Cosgrove started that challenge yards away mm-hmm. from where I was, and to me, it was just a sign of that you used to see in, like you say, in the 70s and 80s, of an angry player mm-hmm. in a team that has just lost a second goal, mm-hmm. And thinking, right, I'm really going to make my mark here.
Yeah,
and you got to remember, it was kind of, it was in front of the Aberdeen fans as well, so.
And then McInnes is coming out with this shite about Ayer smiling and winking.
Yeah, and winking, yeah.
Nonsense. So, on the team, which will get us on to the next coming up, so my dilemma for the team that played against Aberdeen and played against Hearts and has played a few games recently and for coming up against Rangers, I like Incham, I like McGregor, and I like Brown. And I like Edvard, and I like Forrest, and I like Christie. But in order to get Incham, McGregor and Brown in the team, he plays Forrest on the left, Christie on the right, and Edvard through the middle. And I think Christie's, ignoring the where do you then play Incham, Brown and McGregor bit for a minute, I prefer Christie at number 10. I prefer Forrest on the right, two on the left. So he made one substitution in the Aberdeen game, mm. and that one substitution moved three players into my belief of their better position. Mikey Johnson came in.
When he brought Johnson on,
and played on the left. Forrest yep. played on the right. Christie yep. went into the middle.
Yep.
And it, for me, it's no coincidence that we then scored their second goal shortly after yep. he did that.
Yeah.
So looking forward to the Rangers game, that gives me a dilemma, because I think we are much stronger with Forrest on the right, Christie in the middle, and therefore you need somebody on the left. Elianusi's injured, so I would play Johnson. But that then means you cannot play one of Brown, McGregor and Cham, which means he's going to drop in Cham because he's going to play Brown and McGregor.
Yeah, well, I would have thought he would do that anyway, because obviously, with the game being at Celtic Park, I think Lenny will set it up in a more attacking way. Mm-hmm. So, unless he starts with Incham, and he sees that team through the first phase of the game without conceding, because mm-hmm. Defensively that looks stronger. The only thing I'd say as well is, Incham obviously likes playing with Edouard.
Yep.
They are on the same wavelength.
Mm-hmm.
So, who knows?
Well, we'll go to the St Mirren game first. So, we've got the St Mirren game on Boxing Day. It's really unusual. We're not playing Aberdeen away on Boxing Day. We always seem to play Aberdeen away on Boxing Day. Maybe we probably don't. It's just my perception of things. So, first up, that I find odd, because there's no reason for it. It's a 3 o'clock kickoff.
I know.
I don't know why I find it odd. Because I suppose, it's a bank holiday, so very few people are working. But it's just the concept of having it at 3 o'clock on a Boxing Day. So, what's your team going to be for the St Mirren game? Do you take one game at a time and just play your best 11 against St Mirren, win it, and then see who's fit for Sunday? Or do you take into account that if you beat Rangers on Sunday, that opens up a massive gap, and so you look after the team for the St Mirren game?
I'd go with a strong team against St Mirren.
Right.
I'd start with a strong team.
Mm-hmm.
St Mirren can't score.
Yeah.
They're one of the lowest, I think they've got one of the lowest goals for in the league. So potentially, they're not going to be much of a threat to us, goal-scoring-wise.
Mm-hmm.
So, for me, it's about, again, the first phase of the game, start strongly, and if we get one or two goals up, then Lenny needs to think about kind of like substituting key individuals who are kind of like must players against Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
So the obvious one is, if we get, I don't know, 2-0 up by half time, for instance, there's a strong case for actually saying, well, what we'll do is we'll give Griffiths 45 minutes and rest Edouard.
Yep.
And similarly, maybe a bit later in the game, there's a case of actually saying, well, we'll haul off one of the central defenders, probably Julien, and kind of make sure we just get through that St Mirren game with a win and protecting some of those players. But football's football, you know, it only takes one bad tackle or one kind of freak incident and, you know, a player could end up getting injured. But I don't think that's not a reason to kind of play a weaker team, in my view. You get your 3 points in the bag, you know, and take it from there.
So you play strongest team against St Mirren. And so what's the score going to be? What's your prediction for the score?
Well, as I say, I mean, St Mirren have not been scoring. So for me, I'd go for a 3-0 win.
Okay. So then that takes us on to the Rangers game, which if we win and they win, if we match each other result for result, we go into that game 5 points ahead of them. Winning it would take us 8 points clear. Granted, we would have a game in hand, but it's some really interesting that we are 10 points and 12 goals in terms of goal difference better than the same point last season.
Last season, yep.
And we are only 3 points off, but we are a better goal difference than the Invincible season. So getting back to the point of the reduction in quality of the other teams and the slight improvement of Rangers, the fact that they are so close to us demonstrates that.
Because
if we are so close to the Invincible team and so much better than this time last season, but I'll go on to my thoughts on this time last season and what that means for the rest of the season in a minute, but it demonstrates the proximity. So psychologically, if we could go into the winter break 8 points are clear of them,
correct,
puts a lot of pressure on them.
Absolutely. And I think the thing for me is going into that game, you know, there's lots of talk, obviously there's still lots of talk about the cup final and how they dominated that game, but we were poor that day and we had some kind of enforced changes. We've got a squad now where, you know, we've got players who are back now and who've got game time underneath them in the last few weeks since the cup final, where essentially we're in a much, much stronger position and, you know, we've got home advantage.
He played Elianusi to get back to enable him to play Elianusi, Christy Forrest.
And Elianusi was nowhere near fit
He wasn't fit, and then whatever injury he had reoccurred during the game.
Yeah.
And he's now not playing until January, so there was that. He did his foot in the 60th minute.
He did.
And was playing with a bad shoulder.
Yeah. No Edouard.
Edouard in the starting lineup. So there's a few things. The only thing that I've heard people talk about is that although Rangers played with wingers in that game, unlike the game at Ibrox, and it's one of these things, I don't actually tend to watch opposition teams that much, so I'm always watching for what Celtic are not doing right rather than what other teams.
Yeah, I understand that.
But their wingers were playing in.
Yeah, that's right. They didn't play with width.
Yeah, so effectively they had a massive overload in the middle of the park, which is where they were getting control of the ball. So the only other thing, I heard a couple of people talk after we played against Hibs with the three at the back that you mentioned. I did hear a couple of people talk about whether we would play with three at the back against Rangers and play with wing-backs.
Possibly.
My only thing is, for me, the big massive thing about it, Rangers pressed us high up the park at Hampden, yep. and because we didn't have Edward, when Fraser Foster played the ball long,
exactly, the ball was just going to come, but
it just come straight back into the middle of the park where they've overloaded the middle of the park.
Correct. Yeah.
Whereas if we've got Edward and Fraser Foster plays it long, he can either hold it up or, if it goes beyond him, he's got pace to run in behind him, and they've got no pace.
Yeah. And I think as well, I mean, okay, Morales had a lot of chances that day, but that was partly because the defence was put under more pressure than usual, mm-hmm. because we had less possession, and I just don't think that that will happen again. Even if we don't play well, I think we'll have more of the ball.
See, the other thing about Morales, and I've heard some Rangers-orientated people talking about, well, if that game happened again, Fraser Foster would not have the game of his life, and so Morelos would score one or two of those chances. But see, apart from the save that he made to, was it Ryan Jack's shot?
Yeah.
Were any of those saves, saves that you would not expect a goalkeeper who's playing for a top team to make?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not diminishing Fraser Foster's saves, don't get me wrong.
No, but they weren't kind of like world-class saves.
Yeah, my point, if you are a team who's hoping to get to the last 16 of the Europa League or last 8 of the Europa League, and you have a goal, I would expect a goalkeeper playing for Celtic to, those are the saves that you should be making.
Well, there is something in that. The other thing for me, along those lines is, we were talking earlier about Edward in terms of the finesse and the maturity that he's got. So mm-hmm. if obviously he doesn't put all his chances away, Edward, but he's got enough wherewithal and anticipation to actually think, how am I going to beat either the defender to get the shot away mm-hmm. or the goalkeeper to get the ball in the back of the net? And if you notice with Morelos, he's got no finesse.
No.
No finesse. Every shot is just kind of like, it's almost like dragged along the pitch. Mm-hmm. There's no subtlety to his finishing, and if you're a goalkeeper, then you, and if you're a decent goalkeeper, you're going to work hard on how you think a striker is going to get the ball past you mm-hmm. and what you need to do to stop it. And I think for Foster, he's kind of savvy enough and he's mature and he played enough to know how he can save shots from Morelos.
Well, the other thing that go back to, the difference for me between Morelos and Edward, is there was a chance in the first half where Morelos shot and it was one of the great saves from Gordon, but the angle of it, I'd be disappointed if Foster hadn't saved it. But Edward would have cut it back to Ryan Kent, who was standing on the penalty spot.
Yep, correct. Yep.
In fact, you saw that with Edward when we played Wren. Was it Wren?
Yeah.
Where he cut back from the byline.
And His decision making is much, much better. We've touched on his all round game, but yeah, that's Edward for you. I think the other thing to add is, and the press now have made a big thing of it. I think the supporters were making a big thing of it before the press. But that is, Morelos hasn't and seemingly cannot score against us. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you think back to Edward's Celtic career, you know, he's coming onto a game when we're down to 10 men at Ibrox and he kills in a winner.
Yeah.
With 10 men. And in terms of his own self-confidence, I'm sure he's not short of it anyway, but the fact that he can score against them and has done regularly, mm-hmm. it's a huge, huge psychological thing.
So what's your team going to be for the game?
Well, I think what I'd do is, I think one thing we've learnt now is that we can rely on Frimpong. I think, you know, a few weeks ago people were saying, oh yeah, well, he's had one good game and he's really infectious and enthusiastic, but could he play against Rangers? Well, the cup final, okay, it wasn't the greatest Celtic performance, but we won it, and we won it with Frimpong in the team. Mm-hmm. So I think he's showing enough to be able to be picked. So obviously I'd go Forster in goal, Frimpong, Aya, Julian. We've got Bollingoli back, mm-hmm. so obviously I'd have him. And then I think across the middle, Bruni, Christie, McGregor, and then I'd go with Edward and Forrest, and who am I missing?
Left side.
Yeah, and I've put Christie in, so...
Depends whether you play Mikey Johnson or whether you play in Cham and put Forrest on the left, Christie.
Yeah, so I think I'd maybe start with Mikey Johnson, and I think just go for that kind of all-out attack. I know I was saying earlier about how Lenny might play a little bit more cagey, in which case he would include in Cham. Mm-hmm. But I think I'd just go for it right from the start, because I think if we do get ahead, it's a massive game psychologically, as you said.
Yeah.
But it's not just the psychology of it after the 90 minutes is up. The psychology is actually in the game time. So if Celtic score, and particularly if they score early, then that's going to get to them. And Celtic's confidence will grow from that.
The thing for me also, if we are 8 points clear, is... Last season, we went into the winter break.
They won the league then, didn't they?
That's right. They won the league. They won the league at Christmas.
Yep.
And for me, the difference is, and it's interesting because Barca Boy stuck up a tweet. So they won the league because we were both on the same points. We were both on 42 points.
Yep.
Going into the new year split, and Barca Boy put up a thing about the proportion, the percentage of Celtic players who have been out injured this season, and comparing it with Rangers.
Yep.
And we have a much higher proportion of our players who've missed a game this season because yep. of injury compared to them.
Yeah.
And I said, well, there's two possible. There's one of that might be because we've got some repeat offenders, and so there might be players who just don't like playing with a niggle, and so they're always going to be people who. Whereas I always think more mature players sometimes are more likely to have just got to the point in their career where they accept that they don't play feeling perfect every game, but also. I think we nurse our players more because we've got a bigger squad, and when a player's got a niggle, we take them out to protect them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's why we ended up pushing ahead of them so much after the winter break, because they were playing everybody every week and we weren't.
Yeah, I think we touched on this before, maybe when Rodgers was manager, that if you look at the top sides in Europe, they have this kind of like trajectory where they get themselves into decent positions in their domestic leagues.
Yep.
And I'm not saying they just do enough, but it's kind of almost feels like that in terms of them getting through, let's say, the group stages of mm-hmm. Champions League. And then what you notice come January, February, all of these top teams, they all then start motoring.
Yeah.
And I think if you switch the clock back maybe 10, 15, 20 years, there was a lot more talk about kind of like top teams running out of gas because of having to play too many games.
Uh-huh.
But I think the whole sports psychology and sports science thing is in a different place now. And teams are managed over a season. And they're managed in a way that they peak at, you know, I hate the cliche, but what people call the business end of the season.
I think
that's ingrained into Celtic's backroom.
Yeah, I heard someone, it was a few years ago, saying that trophies are won February to May, and so the elite clubs they organise everything so the players are at their peak February to May.
Yep.
And so I do. If we replicate what happened last season and we go into the break 8 points clear, that's when we move.
Yep.
Move forward. So anyway, before we finish off, round off for Christmas, I want your prediction for the score for the Rangers game.
Well, I don't think they'll score against us, and I think we'll win 2-0.
Well, that would do me nicely. And with that, Hull boy, I will say Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and hope you're right.
Merry Christmas, Harry, and to everybody who's listening.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Snow is falling all around me. Children playing, having fun.
So all I have to say now is may I wish everybody who takes the time to listen to this podcast, because obviously people who don't take the time to listen to the podcast won't hear this bit, to wish you all a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Good night and God bless. One and all. Good night.
Snow is falling, snow is falling.